we're coming off of, as everyone is well aware, a very difficult couple of years with a budget stalemate, and that was finally finished last year. But there's no guarantee that there will be a budget this year. What are you expecting?
Well, you know, if I had the ability to predict what may happen here over the coming weeks, I suppose I could go to Vegas and make a lot more money or something like that. But I think, you know, there could be a couple of scenarios moving forward. As you point out, in a couple of weeks, the General Assembly will be coming back from their halftime intermission, the break that they usually take at this time in the spring. And, of course, everyone was eager to get out of Springfield at the end of March so they could be about primary election business and whatnot. But they'll be coming back in the week of the 9th, and then we'll start to see where things go. I think everyone, at least in the circles with whom I talk, primarily the public university presidents and others at the state agencies, are very hopeful that a budget deal can be struck, that we don't go into another fiscal year without a spending plan, without an agreement, without knowing what we're going to be looking at. And in the case of the public universities, the authority to get any kind of state appropriations. We'll see where that goes. No one wants to repeat that drama from a year ago that was 2 years running, but I suppose it could happen. One of the options might be to think about a six-month budget to get us through the general election in November, provide that spending authority to have a plan out there to keep state appropriations flowing to all of the state agencies and others that receive those funds, keep operations fairly normal, see where the governor's race comes out, and then as the General Assembly comes back in the spring of 19, get the rest of that budget done. And that would be maybe not the worst outcome in the world. I know no one wants to have that as kind of the first go-to, but better something for 6 months than nothing else. You hear discussion that maybe there could be a full budget bill, and then the governor would have to decide what he wants to do with that. Would the governor once again veto a budget he doesn't like as he heads into a re-election? I don't know. And probably those questions are better for someone like Jack Tichner or John Jackson to speculate about. But I do think you've got two or three plausible scenarios over the course of the coming weeks. And probably to some degree, all of them are fraught with some difficulty. But we'll continue to monitor, make the case for SIU. And I guess I would say on this point, too, Jennifer, while we haven't had a long time to catch back up with pushing out operating funds and getting reserves built back, if it turned out that we were looking at some sort of six-month impasse again, while nobody wants it, and it would put us, again, some steps behind, we are looking at a way to maneuver through that if it came to be. So we're not going to get into October and have some discussion about whether SIU Carbondale can keep its doors open. It's going to be difficult to move things forward operationally. But again, as I've said before, particularly during the two-year crisis, we're not in a question of existential crisis having to close, but it would make things very difficult because we haven't recovered from the 2 years we suffered through.
Sure. And of course, you are well-versed now in dealing with a lack of funding.
Yes, we know how to do cash flow. We know how to make use of reserves and working with vendors and things of that, but it's not a good way to do business.
There was an interesting hearing a couple of weeks ago. You went before the House Higher Education Appropriations Committee, mm-hmm. as you do every year. This
yes.
is not unusual. And other leaders of the Carbondale and Edwardsville campus, as well as Dr. Cruz from the School of Medicine. I was interested that the lawmakers didn't ask a lot of budget-related questions. They were talking about things like diversity
yes.
and enrollment, which is budget-related. Mm-hmm. Were you expecting that, or were you surprised by their questions?
Well, you know, there's an old rule that you know well if you're a state agency head or a university president. And, of course, you know, I think about my days at the State Board of Education getting coached on these hearings as well. And that rule or that axiom is just because you're going in for an appropriations hearing, understand that legislators can ask any question they want. And the point that you raise, they certainly did in that hearing. On the whole, there was very little discussion along the lines of what we were just talking about here. Kind of little focus on the financial health of the system and that type of thing, and much more went into other policy questions, operating details about the campuses and that type of thing. I don't know if you try to read tea leaves whether that suggests that the thinking about the budget is somewhat a foregone conclusion or not. I don't know, but it was almost an afterthought when you did get a question or two asked that it might have something to do with the FY19 funding, and maybe that's a hint or a suggestion that this is just all going to run its own course, and it doesn't matter what the testifying agencies have to say. I don't know, but our challenge was to respond to the questions that they posed in a way that provided them the information they wanted. We do some follow-up written responses for things that they ask about, and we'll play that out in the same fashion on the Senate side. We're in front of Senate Appropriations 2 near the end of April and do all that again. But I don't know what we read into the fact there was little discussion about the budget as we were in an Appropriations Committee. But we try to be responsive to whatever they want to know.
So a couple of things that they did bring up, I wanted to be a little more specific. Diversity was a big picture item.
Yes.
I know that the board and the system as a whole have moved in a direction of increasing awareness of diversity initiatives. In your mind, are things getting better?
In my mind, things are stable, but we've got to do more. There are opportunities that exist, not just at Carbondale, but for all the campuses to really expand out what we think about diversity and inclusion as a value for the institution. And in fact, it's interesting. I've just spent a few minutes with a student diversity group giving a welcome to a meeting they're doing, and we've got to take on more in regard to broader definitions of diversity. We need to do mentoring for others who will pick up this mantle and move it forward. The question at the committee came from Representative Will Davis, who is an alum from SIU Carbondale. He's been a strong advocate and champion for this, and I think Representative Davis, as often is the case, wants to know the status of this very important issue on the campus of his alma mater. So we did try to provide some background, as did the chancellor, who was at the testimony as well, to let him know that, yes, in spite of everything else going on, we're trying to move forward in areas. But in terms of the overall climate, culture, we have a long way to go. There's no doubt about it, in my view.
To the questions about enrollment, they did also talk about this reorganization proposal on the Carbondale campus.
To some degree. There wasn't a lot of questioning on it, but wanted more background.
How, in your mind, are the two campuses, main campuses, Edwardsville and Carbondale, moving forward on enrollment and recruiting and retention? And how does that reorganization factor in?
Well, I think the big question in all of this is, will the reorganization plan lead to the outcomes that have to exist for whatever plan comes into place? Depending upon the chancellor you have, each chancellor who might have been in this position could bring a very unique, idiosyncratic plan for moving the university forward. That's the nature of leadership, and you define where you want to go and how. So Chancellor Montemagno has presented a plan. That's only a vehicle. To me, it's not nearly as much about how the plan proceeds as it's making its way now for review and potentially votes up or down as we go forward. The test of a plan comes for Carbondale. Does it drive enrollment? Does it attract students to this campus and build numbers? Does it get the campus to a place of financial sustainability? Because it is not there at this time. Does it provide the resources necessary to build out the research enterprise and for Carbondale to be a steward of this place, taking on a lot of initiatives around quality of life that we have traditionally done that now we don't have the money to do anymore? That's going to be the test of any plan that ultimately moves forward. And I think people are making their judgments about that right now as to whether or not this is the vehicle to get us toward those ends. And people are weighing in, suggesting their ideas, and we see where that goes from there as people make those judgments.
One of the things that comes with that dip in enrollment, and it's more than a dip, than the dive in enrollment we've seen over the last couple of decades, is that we've learned the East campus housing area, what's traditionally known as the towers,
yes,
will likely be closed this fall.
That's what's been announced, yes.
How does that affect, when you're trying to sell your university, the fact that you have so many buildings that are now vacant and in some cases dangerous to be around?
Well, I think what's been somewhat unfortunate is the announcement on the towers came in conjunction with recent reports on the enrollment drop as we're looking at 2018-19. So in the minds of the public, those two things have been brought together. There's been a confluence of those two facts, and people have read the towers going dormant as a direct outgrowth of the enrollment, which it is, I understand, but the fact that they were in the media together probably was not the best outcome that the campus could have looked for. But the idea, I think, that the campus then has to show is that there is, and I know the chancellor's been working on this, a vibrant engagement of student life, a climate that pulls students in. So whether all students are moved over to Thompson Point and a move of the student community over there, as long as we can show, a satisfactory level of housing, which we can in those student residences, with some sort of active, engaged student life experience, I don't think it's necessarily a fatal blow. But as they say, the optics are not great on the fact that these two things are out there at the same time. But financially, it's, again, given where the campus is, it's not sustainable for trying to keep those open when the numbers aren't there to justify it.
Dr. Dunn, thanks so much.
Thank you.